I'm Jane Wilcox, and you are listening to Shekleziology, Girls Talking Church.
Tell your girls a story, I won't tell you a lie. Anything you want, you can do it just fine. Come on.
I'm here today with the She team. Besides myself, we are
Jennifer Johnson,
Chrisanne Swartley,
Kim Ho.
The She team is tackling a series on power, deception, and vulnerability in the church. Today is a mashup of Diane Langberg's recent book, Redeeming Power, Understanding Authority and Abuse in the Church, and the four-part documentary on the Duggars called Shiny Happy People that first aired on Amazon Prime. So here we go, ladies. I was in seminary taking a counseling course for pastors when I was introduced to Diane Langberg and her work on dynamics of power and deception and abuse in the church. First of all, she did come into our classroom and speak to us in person at one point, but we also were given, this is how old I am, we're given cassette tape recordings of two of her lectures, which I actually still have. I also have it on digital form, but I still have those babies because they were golden. I have so appreciated her teaching, one, because she had such a clear articulation of the dynamics of power and also packaged it in the idea that we all possess power in various capacities and the talents that we innately hold, but also her call to the responsibility we all have in wielding that power justly, as well as the self-work of becoming aware of our propensity to use power to achieve our own ends or ultimately to abuse that power to those that are vulnerable around us. So let's start with some definitions of power and vulnerability and deception, maybe even exploitation in there. I'm going to read a little bit from Diane's book and then just throw out some ideas for us to talk about. I'm going to start right at the top. So this is what she says. The dynamics of power are ever present in my Christian psychology practice. Power can be a source of blessing, but when it is abused, untold damage to the body and the name of Christ, often in the name of Christ, is done. For the sake of that body and that wonderful name, I believe we need to wrestle with the issue of power and understand how it can be used for healing or harm, for good or evil. She goes on to say, now this is where she introduces at least a working definition for power. She says, our English word power means, quote, having the capacity to do something, to act or produce an effect, to influence people or events, or to have authority, unquote. It also has harsher meanings, to master, dominate, coerce, or force. By our sheer presence in the world, we, God's image bearers, have power. She then goes on, and again, one of the things I've very much enjoyed about Langberg is she always starts the conversation about power with the power that we do have, and then gives us some definition around what might that look like? What kinds of power are out there? So I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'm just going to introduce how she would define the categories of power. And then I'm going to ask us, so you can think about this as I'm reading, what is your superpower? Okay. So here she goes. There are many types of power. Verbal power involves using words, often in artful ways, to manage situations and control others. Silence can be a wonderful gift. Silence can also be a weapon. The sting of silence used to punish or ignore goes very deep. So that's one kind of power, verbal power. She says emotional power is often, though not always, paired with verbal power. Emotions can be used to comfort another with empathy or to control what people say and do, often intimidating and silencing them. So second one is emotional power. This one, I think, is obvious. She says power can manifest itself in physical size or strength. Of course, if one person weighs 220 pounds and the other one weighs 85 pounds, there's a power differential. Third one is just sheer strength. The next one, she says, people with specialized knowledge can wield great power, speaking authoritatively and expecting what they say to be accepted because, quote, they know. So there's a fourth kind of power. She goes on to say, like silence, absence also has great power. The emotional absence of a spouse is deeply wounding. On the other hand, the refusal to join in with a group of bullies is a powerful and positive absence for the one being bullied. So there's another one. She goes on. Another type of power that some people wield is economic power. Money can buy many things in this world, and one of those things is power. That power can be used wisely or graciously, or it can be used to manipulate, control, and terrify. Two more. The next one is spiritual power is another kind of power that can be dangerous unless it is exercised in obedience to God. I'm going to read this whole paragraph because I think there's a certain gravity to this one. This form of power is used to control, manipulate, or intimidate others to meet one's own needs or the needs of a particular organization, often by using words cloaked in nice-sounding spiritual language and concepts, often in the name of God. The use of that concept alone, that somehow God has endowed me with a spiritual power, that assumes a certain power differential. Maybe if I'm a clergy member or a priest or something like that, there's an inherent sense of power over someone in that sense. And then her last one is, this is the first time I've actually heard her acknowledge a cultural power. So this is pretty interesting. Finally, our cultures, families, tribes, secular and religious communities, and the nations all have tremendous power in shaping minds and lives. And then she goes on to say, culture is like oxygen, and that it is around us. Sometimes it's often invisible. It's literally the air that we breathe without really acknowledging how much influence and power it has. So there's a definition of power for us. I often will shorten that to power is simply the capacity to influence towards an intended end. For those of us that often think of power only in a negative sense, Langberg never goes there. She just says, it depends on how we are using that power. And then, of course, the different kinds of powers. So I would love to hear what you think your superpower is. And if you understood Langberg correctly, it is this giftedness that we have. It is our strength. So I like to call it our superpower. I think she would also say, in the same vein, that superpower can become one of the most dangerous weapons that we use against other people if we do not wield it well. So what would you all say your superpower is?
I think mine is a combination of emotional and verbal. I've always been good with words. I've always been an avid reader. And so from the time I was young, had a pretty big vocabulary and could articulate things fairly well. So verbal, but then I'm also a very passionate person. I don't know if I would call myself charismatic or not, but I can speak with a lot of emotion behind it and have gotten the feedback that when I speak with passion, that people are drawn in. So I think, a combination of verbal and emotional.
Cool.
I would say verbal. Like Chrisanne, I've always been drawn to words. I've always been good at using words. I discovered the power of that when I had my own business as a writer for 10, 12 years. So not just earning my living with it, but being able to, the kinds of things that I was able to write, both in my own voice, like my personal blog, but also in others' voices, like ghostwriting sermons for men. I mean, yikes, that's a whole other conversation. Small group Bible study curriculum. I mean, I was literally shaping what these groups were potentially going to be talking about if they use that particular study guide. So, and then of course, you know, the shadow side of that is that I can be pretty cutting in an argument or using sarcasm. I'm very good at sarcasm for the for the four people listening to this podcast who hadn't already figured that out. So, I mean, you know, all of our gifts have a shadow side, but I think I've just always been a words person and try to steward that wisely more days than not.
Kim, what you got?
I'm like, is it no coincidence? All four of us like lean into this like verbal realm. It's as if almost we like talking or something. I think mine varies. I think in mine, in like my combination of verbal and emotional, I think a lot of people have said that I do a really good job of synthesizing their thought spaghetti into something really concise, or giving vocabulary to the thing that they're looking to describe. And they're like, oh, that's what I meant. Like that, it sounds so much better when you say it. I think I also realized, like, emotionally, it's so interesting because Langberg says emotion often goes with verbal.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, I'm like, how would I parse those two? Because I think I lean in emotionally. And I think it took me a long time to accept that emotionally, where I am gifted, I think I am a great crier in the sense that I'm not afraid to cry when someone shares, and not in a way to take the attention to myself, but to let and signal other people know that it's okay to cry. And so I'm like, oh, that's such an interesting way of doing things, emotion without words, but it's possible.
Interesting. I hadn't thought of that before. I think just by the reality that all of us, the four of us, have a master's level education, and we're also, to some extent, spiritual leaders. So whether it is specifically within a congregational setting, or if we're doing something at church and we are leading folks, when I asked for your superpower, I think we were thinking of that particular giftedness. And we all do. We all do have verbal power, for sure. And I don't always wield it well. You know, Jen has the sarcasm. Sometimes I just have the complete blunt truth. There's no love in speaking what is true. And while that is all true, I think there are layers that we have of power, right? And so we do have that verbal power. We are also spiritual leaders or religious leaders in our churches. And people will look to us for wisdom and guidance, and at times speaking for God, particularly when we're preaching or teaching.
Yep.
Another layer. Langberg talked about, she phrased it as specialized knowledge. So not only in divinity, if we have an MDiv or we've been in the church long enough that we know our theology well, we do have a specialized knowledge compared to others. And again, another layer. So if we're standing in front of a parishioner, a church person that doesn't have those three things, that's a lot of a power differential between us and them. We live in that. That's just part of who we are. I think she would say becoming conscious of that, that's a pretty huge power differential to those sitting in the pews. So fun. If we could play with that just a little bit further, I don't think as four women sitting here that we are of average build, probably on the smaller size than the larger size. There are no volleyball players on this podcast.
No basketball players.
No basketball players. But if we were standing in front of a three-year-old toddler, we have physical power.
Yes.
Right? Over that toddler who probably weighs like 30 pounds or something, maybe. I don't know what toddlers weigh anymore. I can't remember. It's interesting to play with the idea of these power differentials that, and they're always changing, right? When we go into a different setting, Langberg has certainly laid out the argument that every encounter with another being, that there's some kind of power differential going on there. So yeah, power.
So can I ask a question? That's fascinating to me to think about, because as a female pastor, so I have specialized knowledge. I have some sort of spiritual power, verbal power, and emotional power. Standing in front of a male parishioner who has physical power over me and perhaps some other forms of power.
Yeah.
How do you weigh those dynamics? Because in some ways, he's the more powerful. In some ways, I'm the more powerful. Is my power somehow diluted? Are certain kinds of power more impactful in a moment than other kinds of power? Like, say, me in the pulpit, him in the pew, my power is more highlighted, perhaps, and his is more diluted.
Yeah.
But in a one-on-one situation, I might feel intimidated in some ways, even though looking at the list, I might have more power, more powers, plural, checked off on that list. And yet I might feel intimidated by his physical power. Yeah, interesting.
I think it's interesting to think about what she left off the list. And she's certainly the expert. I'm not. So I'm not necessarily questioning her expertise as much as it's just noting an absence, right? So she didn't mention gender as a power differential. She mentioned specialized knowledge, but she didn't mention positional authority. So like, I have power in that scenario where I'm with my staff. You know, I was 3 minutes late to our staff meeting today and they were all sitting there waiting for me. You know, they're awesome. They had shown up and they were gracious with me when I wasted 3 minutes of their time, but that's because I have the power, right? But if I go into my boss's office, it's a very different story. And then it's a third story again, if I go into a meeting with my colleagues, the other senior leaders with our boss, right? Yep. Then there's a shared kind of experience. And maybe those are included in things, but I think it was very interesting that she didn't mention the gender dynamic, because I think what Christina is saying is spot on. and maybe that's just the culture. Maybe that's swept up into the culture bucket because different cultures have different patriarchal or matriarchal systems. But like, I would 100% probably feel intimidated, even if I was the spiritual leader of a group of people. If there was some dude who was mad at me, I wouldn't want to be in the room. Yeah. I'd want to witness. I wouldn't want to be in the room by myself. I would probably approach that very differently than if there was a female member of the congregation who was mad at me.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's just, and the more I'm talking, the more I'm saying probably that is under the heading of culture because she doesn't really mention race, but that would also be in the heading of culture. There's definitely power differentials. If you're in that same scenario that Chrisanne described, but one person is a person of color and the other person is white, there's a whole different dynamic, right? So I don't think that takes away from anything that she's pointing out. Everything she's pointing out is spot on. I think it's just helpful to kind of parse out some additional ones that we experience or that we need to be aware of.
Yeah, I would have dropped it in the culture bucket. And she doesn't, at least in this introductory section, she does not note that. But later she talks about systemic power, systemic abuse. And she begins talking about race and those sorts of things. And my first introduction to Langberg, she really hadn't fleshed out systemic abuse of power at that point. She's a counselor, right? She's a psychologist. So, yeah, I was going to say something else about power and, context. This is one of those topics that context is everything. And again, we can, just like you noted, Jen, you can go from room to room and the power dynamics change, right? And we could go from adult to child to a woman before a husband that is abusing her. Like the dynamics of power continually change given the circumstance. I think the most important thing in this is us being aware of those power dynamics and our potential to abuse, to overstep, to exploit. And to be able to then see, become conscious of when you are in a room and there's a power dynamic and there's a power play, if you will, if you let me use that word, there's a power play unfolding in front of your eyes. And we become super aware of that differential, that someone has crossed the line and that we can respond in some way, you know, maybe as a conflict mediator, or maybe you're like, let's pack it up, kids, we're out of here because this is going down bad.
Well, and not to jump too far ahead or too far afield, but you know, she talks about there's power of commission and there's power of omission. There's the power of the things that we do. So to your point, there's the power of the way that we show up in a space. There's the power of knowing what we bring or don't bring to that scenario. But then there's also the power of omission, which is allowing other power plays, as you put it, to unfold in our presence and how we choose to engage or not, and how we choose to use our own agency in those situations. So, yeah, I think it's really helpful to think through it. I think it's also helpful to just kind of acknowledge that it's complicated. And I think sometimes, especially those of us who are kind of more ruminators or longer term processors, sometimes I think I'm not aware of, I think I'm getting better at recognizing it in the moment, but I think sometimes I'm not fully aware of what happened until after I step out of that situation. And that maybe that's okay. I don't need to be reactive all the time, but I think it's helpful to just be constant, to be aware of what's happening.
Yeah. And sometimes I will leave a room or a meeting and I did not put my finger on it, but you're like, something was up with that.
100%.
Like you got blindsided or there's a dynamic going on. And again, you know, you leave the room and you ruminate on it and like that there was something off in that interaction, and it is complicated.
I think beyond an awareness, I think the next thing, I think what we're circling about is actually some sort of literacy almost in your power and where to dial it in and where to dial it back, and knowing where you need to lean in, or because you exert power in a certain way, you don't want to withdraw, but you do need to, as kindly as possible, limit it or be aware of it so that you create enough space for those around you so that your power is being used well and it's not using to negatively affect those who are around you. But you're right, it starts with that awareness and that we are never really operating only out of one sense of power, probably in any relationship, in any room, in any context. But it requires the awareness and then the ongoing skill and literacy to enter a space do a check, leave the space, do some reflection so that when you enter back in, whenever that is, you know how to enter in better.
Which is such a good point, because that's what Jesus did, right? I mean, he didn't always, well, of course he had unlimited power at his disposal, but even his, in the sense in which he was fully man and he had constraints on his power, even that in terms of his spiritual authority, his authority as a male, his verbal, he was definitely verbally gifted, right? His emotional, I mean, he was, he had all of them as a superpower because he was Jesus, but he didn't go around, he was meek. He was the definition of meek. He was contained strength. He was contained power. And he, but man, did he use it when, you know, we were joking earlier about like the whitewashed tombs, you know, calling out the Pharisees.
Brood of vipers.
He had his moments, right?
That's right.
But he didn't walk around doing that all the time because, you know, that wasn't what he was there to do. So I think that's a really good point, Kim. And I think really helpful to think about, even if you may have the power advantage in a room, it doesn't mean you necessarily use it, because that may not be what's most helpful.
I mean, that's wisdom and maturity, right? To know when to step up and when to step back.
So fun little side story. While I'm moderating the business meetings last week at conference, and I was the end of day two, somebody came up to me, just, you know, I know him sort of not really well, but he comes up and he says, and he's a little nervous. He says, you know, Jane, you're the moderator. And you know, I think you might be putting too much of your opinion in this conversation. So I pat him and say, you're wrong. I mean, I said, you're wrong. Because there were dominant voices in that conversation on the floor, conference floor. And so I said, my role is the facilitator. And I know I'm well aware of the power I have. Well aware. And so... But he was perceiving me inserting my opinion for making sure that the voices that are not being heard on this floor right now, that are scared to walk up to a microphone, in the swamp of resistance, that I'm making sure that their voice is being heard, or at least I'm welcoming them, inviting them, making space, pushing away. And he's so much on the dominant side, he perceived it as I'm inserting my opinion. So I just, I had to clarify that.
My hands aren't sweating or anything.
Okay. Let's talk about vulnerability. I love how that rolled out for power, and just giving some definition so we can think along with our listeners about what power might look like for them, or power differentials. Langberg, she also unpacks for us vulnerability and deception. So I'm just going to read a little bit about the vulnerability, and we can talk about that a little bit as well. She says, to be vulnerable is to have the capacity to be wounded. I don't know if she stole that from Brené Brown or not, or she came up with that on her own, but that's good. To be vulnerable is to have the capacity to be wounded. She says, our capacity for being wounded is a constant. Sadly, oftentimes our collective response when someone is wounded is to blame them. For example, if they had done this action, then maybe the consequence, maybe I wouldn't have, or that would not have happened. She goes on giving us an example. She goes on to say, many years ago, I taught a seminary class on clergy sexual abuse. At one point in the lecture, I said, quote, as pastors, you will have power in your relationships with congregants. Always, whether you feel powerful or vulnerable, at any given time, you're the one with the power in that relationship. Your words and actions carry authority. If a woman comes to see you for counseling about her marriage, and one day, confused and longing for attention, she stands up and undresses in front of you, and she puts this in italics as an emphasis, and undresses in front of you, what happens next depends entirely on you. What she has done tells us some things about her for sure, but what you do in response tells us about you. It tells us what you are like in the presence of unfettered vulnerability. Isn't that lovely how she framed that? Just a little bit more. The exploitation of the vulnerable person tells us about the exploiter, not the victim of that exploitation. How can I say with certainty? And then she goes on to quote scripture. She quotes Matthew 7, what comes out of a person is what defiles him, For from within, out of the heart of a man, comes evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, foolishness. All these things come from within and they defile a person. And then she talks about deceit, which I am just going to give us a brief taste of what she says about deceit. She has much more to say in the latter chapters. Mm-hmm. We reach for deception in order to reframe, rename, and protect ourselves. We say, I did not do it. It was someone else's fault. We deceive ourselves and in turn work to deceive others. I had sex with her because she... If the rape is reported, he may have friends and family who will support his views. Wrong choices and inaccurate labeling of exploitation of another's vulnerability cause further damage to ourselves and others. But the truth is that our response to vulnerability tells us about us and only us. What comes out of us in the face of vulnerability was there all the time. The vulnerability of the other has merely exposed the truth about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Whew. What do y'all think about that?
That's part of what troubled me so much about the SBC stuff.
Mm.
I mean, obviously there was a lot to be bothered by in that scenario in terms of the allegations of abuse and the way that those allegations were handled, because it showed, and we can pick on the SBC, any faith community that ignores victims or tries to silence victims or tries to protect abusers. It shows us something about ourselves. It shows us something about those individual leaders, but it also shows us something about the systemic way that we're thinking about our faith community and what's most important and how we think those goals are going to best be achieved. And if we think those goals of being a Christ following community are best going to be achieved by silencing people who come against the leader. So I think that's part of, and I didn't really have, I mean, I had a sense of that when all that was going down and it's still going down. But I think when I read some of this about vulnerability, it kind of gave words to part of what just felt so gross about that whole situation was, we're seeing it play out in real time, who these leaders are, but what we've built some of this on, right? Like, what are the foundational beliefs here? They're being exposed and they're not pretty.
Mm. And then what we do, I mean, it was a great example. She gave a very pointed example with a pastor and a woman that came in for counseling and her level of vulnerability. And it is about us. It goes back to, I think, the conversation that we just had about being very aware of the power that you hold in that moment.
Yes.
And whether you will be the exploiter of someone else's vulnerability. Like it does teeter on our response.
Mm-hmm. I can't help but think of the quote that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about that a lot. And even as I transition from an associate pastor role where I've always had a person that I directly reported to and was responsible to, into a lead pastor role where, I mean, of course, there's the church board and there's denominational folks, but it's a heavier mantle to carry. And I'm very aware of the greater power that that position holds. And I keep thinking about that quote and how I always want to have that person. Oh my gosh. Okay. So rabbit trail. I'm a huge West Wing fan. Yeah. I love the West Wing. It's so old now, but I loved that series. And there's a point in the series where the president Josiah Bartlett is having very severe sleep issues. And it has to do with childhood trauma and also the stress, of course, of his job. And a counselor comes in to sit with him. And the counselor gets pretty testy with him. And the president is not used to that because everyone is so deferential toward him, and especially in the Oval Office. And at one point, he's like, are you really comfortable talking to me like that? And the therapist says to him, President Bartlett, I am going to be the one person in your life who doesn't care that you're the president. And I am going to talk to you. I am the expert. And I am going to talk to you like this because you need help. And I am the one to help you.
Tell them.
And I think about that and I think I always want to have a yes. handful of people like that in my life who will be like, I don't care if you're a senior pastor. I don't care if you're a bishop. I don't care, you know, what position yes. you hold, Chris Ann. I'm just going to talk to you the way you need someone to talk to you because you need help and I'm here to help you.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. A check on our power.
Yes, because we can right? self-deceive. Yes. Oh, I'm doing this to help them. Oh, but I know best and they just need to listen to me. I mean, this is Mark Driscoll, right? He thought he had mm-hmm. all the answers. He believed that. And he did not tolerate anyone speaking truth to him about how power had the power to corrupt him. And so he got rid of all of those people, and then it was just unchecked power. And he talks about the bus running over the bodies, mm. you know, yeah, I'm afraid of ending up like that because I know power can deceive. Power yeah. is intoxicating.
And I mean, we are going to step into the realm of, I don't know if it's abuse, but having exceeded our, I overused my power. Sometimes we do that.
Overstep.
That's probably, yeah. Overstep.
Mistreat.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there are parenting moments when we've done that.
Oh, for sure.
You're like, probably used my verbal power too strongly there. Right. Or I exasperated my child. And certainly as having been a lead pastor, there are times where I probably overstepped or misstepped when I've said something. Again, I think it goes back. Did I just see that? Did I acknowledge that? Did I not cover it up? Right? Did I not continue down the path of making excuses for that, you know, well, if they wouldn't have done this or wouldn't have done that, I wouldn't have had to say the things that I said and deceiving myself. So I guess I just want to say, we're going to do it. We're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We are quite human and we do have that gift. We have that power. And it is about putting people around us to check that power, becoming aware of it, knowing when to pull back, knowing when to apologize. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, I should not have said that.
I think when people are vulnerable before us, I think a lot of times when people talk about just sharing and like intimacy, a lot of people will say, oh, vulnerability makes me uncomfortable because I don't know how to respond. And that is ultimately about ourselves. We have made someone else's vulnerability mm-hmm. about how I feel. I think to take it in the sliding scale in the, when you see an opening of vulnerability and you use that and then you use to deceive someone after it, it's still all about you. We like kind of, for some reason, like see vulnerability and need to make it about us either to absolve our own discomfort yeah. or like for our own profit or gain. And I think that's just like the ugliest way to say it. We're like being honest with yeah. ourselves. That's just the yeah. ugly truth of what it means to be self-centered. And our power allows us to keep us at the center. And we don't need to step into other people's territory. We don't need to empathize, that we can keep the balance on our end so that we are not put off, you know, we're not put off, you know, the hill, you know, we remain king of the hill, or, you know, we don't have to wade into uncomfortable emotions. We don't have to take accountability for the things that we've done. Yeah, we go around and we sit on top of the hill with our crowns on because we have power.
Thanks a bunch for being a part of our listening community. You can show us some love by hitting the subscribe button wherever you listen to our podcast. You can learn more about us at our website at girlstalkinchurch.com. And you can also engage the She Team and other listeners by joining our Shecclesiology Podcast Community Facebook page. See you there.